there! You've come back! I thought I slayed you last episode! Why have you come back? I will kill you!
Your audio is gonna peak so
high. I am the Crit Crew! Master Crit!
Are you my nemesis?
I am your nemesis!
No, don't kill me!
Thou will be slain!
There's literally no way that this audio quality is good. There is no way your microphone could handle that yelling.
Hey, everybody.
Hey!
Welcome to the Crit Crew. We are talking about Shadows of Mordor. I'm sure that with that great intro that Caleb just did, it was apparent from the very beginning.
Thank you. Yeah, of course. I mean, what else could that have been, right?
Yeah, literally, what else could it be? I always feel weird when our intro is short and I can just jump right into the plot. Like, normally we're not
this
streamlined.
Oh, did you want that bit to go on? Because I really...
It normally... Okay. Look, it's not that I want to. It's just that it normally does. So when we're actually, like, streamlined, it makes me uncomfortable.
I like... We're not anymore, though, because you're talking about how we could have been streamlined.
All right. You guys, I got a little note thing with the plot. I can breeze through it, like, way quick.
Yeah, I mean, I figure you could probably breeze through the plot way quick on this game,
The lack thereof
plot, yeah.
Yeah.
There is plot. It's just not... great or worth discussing.
That's all right. I feel like we have to do it just for formality's sake.
Let's tear through this. All right. Luckily I'm sure that everyone at least has like some passing familiarity with the Lord of the Rings averse. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to explain too much, but you play as generic protagonist Talion, who is a captain stationed at the Black Gate, which is this just sort of gate fortress, like pretty much real close to Mount Doom. It's enemy territory stuff. It's a gate. It is suddenly attacked by three evil-looking bad guys who ritually execute you in an attempt to summon this wraith named Celebrimbor. They succeed, except that Celebrimbor is summoned and merges with Talion, which prevents him from dying and also gets him some pretty cool powers. From here, you go on a quest to kill the three people that killed you because you just want to die. Because it's worth noting, they also killed your wife and children and son, so you just kind of want to be with them. And the other thing you want to know is who Celebrimbor is, because he does not remember. Mm-hmm. While you do this, you meet some characters along the way, like Gollum and Ratbag, who teaches you all about the orc military structure, which will be very important for later discussions. And during the game, you realize that Celebrimbor is the one who forged the Ring of Power, so that's sort of... a twist.
So it's essential mythology.
Yeah. Well, it is worth noting, however, that this is like lore adjacent. they pulled some things. Like Celebrimbor is the one that forged the ring, but they kind of went and did their own thing.
They added a bit of flair. Mm-hmm. Flair for the game.
So the game drags. Like you kill the three people, you do a lot of stuff, and then it ends with you killing the big bad, the Black Hand. You kill him and then go decide to forge your own Ring of Power. Roll credits.
Wow.
What a story.
what a great story.
Yeah. So, and yeah, and as mentioned, this is all Lord of the Rings mythos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very by the movies Lord of the Ring mythos.
That was something that kind of...
Is that a problem to you for a game like this that's really all about its mechanics and combat? Are you bummed out that it's more of a filmic adaptation?
No, the only thing that bothered me is like the moments where they sort of tried to mirror the movie. Like mm-hmm. you find this old person who is also possessed by Sauron in the same way that Theoden was possessed by Saruman in the movie. Like, some of the beats were, like, unnecessarily parallel.
Right.
Mm.
That was the only thing that bothered me. Like, other than that, like, yeah. I don't really... Some people were upset that they went and did their own story and took liberties with the lore. I don't care enough about that.
See, I'm okay with things that take liberties with lore. I tend to think it's more interesting when, like, liberties are taken versus, like... making it so on the nose referential to things. I thought that their Andy Serkis Gollum impersonation was maybe a little too referential to the series.
Wasn't that just Andy Serkis? Didn't they just bring him on to voice it?
No.
I don't think so. No. He was too busy with Planet of the Apes, probably.
No, it's not. It's definitely not Andy Serkis.
It's been a while since I played it and also paid attention to his voice, so, well, never mind.
Yeah, I don't...
they just, like, motion-capped him and got, like, just put his whole spirit into the game.
No.
Oh, okay. No.
They took his essence in a mocap ball.
Essence of Serkis.
The essence of Serkis and a tennis ball attached to a broom handle. That's how I like my Andy Serkis.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Where
do we want to start, boys?
I would like to talk more about how it's reverential to a lot of. I think this game is a great Frankenstein amalgam of open world lessons that the industry has kind of learned over the past 10 years. I think it's a mishmash of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah,
I think Assassin's Creed is the most obvious.
It's such a telling homage, but I think they have iterated. Whoa, okay, a cat fell down. Sorry about that.
But they don't do that.
They don't. Yeah, they don't do that. They're very nimble creatures.
Right.
No, but
do you need to take a break so you can check on your cat?
No. Izzy's
fine. Okay.
You can cut this out if you want it.
No, we are. This is going to be Catgate is the big hashtag Catgate for this episode.
My cat fortress.
Write that down, Max.
No,
but yeah, I'd like to maybe start with how you think it iterates on the open world genre, and maybe how it learns from past entries, or maybe how it maybe takes a step or two back.
Mm-hmm. I had a thought, but, like, here's the thing. I keep, with a lot of these games, I want to be like, oh, this reminds me of, like, the old, like, adventure games I used to play back on the PlayStation 2, but I'm starting to realize that, like, I just hadn't played any adventure games between now and when I was, like, 12, so, like, all of them, it just feels like, from my perspective, no one made any adventure games because I didn't play them, and all of a sudden, they're back.
What do you mean? What do you mean by an adventure game?
You know that's not how it works, right, David?
Yes. I super do. But I'm saying that, like, in terms of, like, iteration,
it's the allegory of the cave.
Which, you know, is a really good thing that I'm saying I'm not very qualified, yet I'm also the one who started talking first. So I don't know what that says about me, but.
Well, so in terms of, like, what. Mechanically, I think this game does extremely well. There's like a sense of mobility that, a lot of the Assassin's Creed games are, they've improved on it a lot. I think Syndicate's a pretty good streamlining of the free running mechanic, but there's something about just how you move in this game that's just so fluid, and you never feel like it's a slog to get from place to place or even scale buildings. You have an ability to kind of fast travel. Or not fast travel. You basically will phase shift forward. There's just a lot of stuff that they've included that I think helps with the mobility in the world.
No, that is something I know. Like, a big part of this game is stealth. Which is surprising when I think about everything that I remember from the game. I don't think about the stealth very much, but, like, that involves a lot of scaling buildings, like you mentioned, and there's really, if you, like, run at a wall, you're never going to have to worry about not climbing it. And the cool thing is, just, like, the way the world is developed, it's not like it's this wall texture that you just sort of, like, Spider-Man up, and it looks weird. Like, anything you charge at, like, you animate, like, you grab this handhold that you didn't notice, and then, like, get your hands into this, like, little crevice to throw yourself up to the next ledge, and it's all it's really impressive, actually.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, I do think that, like, the climbing mechanics in the Assassin's Creed games, they manage to get pretty fluidly down. And it is very much the similar kind of mechanic feel. I just think it does work well, though. Like, again, that you're saying, like, the climbing, it kind of has this feel of, like, ooh, as I hit something, like, I should be able to just figure out how to go up.
I feel like in Assassin's Creed, I'm always steering a car. Like, if that makes sense, you're holding down on the run button, which is your acceleration, and when you hit a wall, you kind of scale it. But there's this,
you know,
point
like
where,
you do like, with a car, you scale walls.
You scale walls. Well, if you're Vin Diesel, perhaps.
Yeah, wall scale, a little wall scaler car.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you just listen to me?
Oh, no, we're listening. It's just the words.
Okay, but it's a similar feel of you're accelerating with a trigger. And I think there's a point with Assassin's Creed where you're on autopilot, and it never... There's a moment where you're trying to ascend a building or jump from a building, and it's kind of wonky because you're just kind of in that autopilot. But I feel like the level design here, there's less of an emphasis on architecture, and it's more about... pure, like you'll go through just like lush, gorgeous landscapes, and then all of a sudden you'll be hit with maybe a stronghold or some ruins that are overtaken. So you don't fall into that trapping or that problem as much because it's very open and
it is worth. Sorry for chuckling. It's just that like. Only like a quarter of this game is lush gorgeous landscapes. Like
is.
Most of it is very gray and rocky.
I still think it's like a very gorgeous landscape, though. You're right. It's not very lush.
I won't defend you for a second on lush.
It's been a hot minute since I played this game.
No, there are two worlds. They're like by Mordor and then Nirn, and Nirn is very green and pretty. But like that's like the end game.
Yes.
You don't spend a whole lot of time there.
Okay. Mordor is like gray singed land.
Okay, open landscape. Not really.
Caleb, this is your lesson. You say one wrong word and we are going to tear it apart.
Tear you apart. But, yeah, you don't run into that issue of, oh, God, I'm suddenly hit with this building and I have to traverse from one to the other. It's a lot more open and free in that respect.
Right.
Yeah.
So, why don't we talk about everybody's favorite mechanic?
Yeah, do you want to just get into the nemesis system and stop dancing around it?
Because I think that's the big contribution.
It was my takeaway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the nemesis system is really cool. All right, moving on to the next point.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah. No, like, so it's just, so like Lord of the Rings is like a franchise that's really been done a lot.
You got this kid Frodo. But anyway, so like the nemesis system, it sets you up with like. Not like some pre-generated enemies to start, and it's just a sort of evolving way of developing. It's weird to like just get into, but how it works is like you have a pool of orcs that have names and they have different abilities, and you can look at them, and they're always sort of vying for power. So if you ever like die or time passes, you'll have like, oh, this low level orc was going to get in a fight with this one and he won, so he got stronger and he moves up further in the rank. And this one lost to this one, but he was spared, so he's now this one's bodyguard. I think I actually mentioned it in our first grab bag when I was talking about emergent narratives with FTL. But what it does is, like, again, it's you. The orcs are sort of pre-generated, but this way they sort of interact is not. So that's how they interact with each other. But then with you can choose to go fight them for, you know, get power and some other rewards. And if you do, they're taken out and someone has to fill their place. But if they survive, they like gain more powerful and they start taunting you. And then it evolves. So like if you lose, you'll go back to fight it. And it'll be this orc will be like, hey, I remember you. I'm going to kill you again, you coward. Or it reminds me if you ran away. Or sometimes if you kill them and like the animation isn't fatal, like if you just cut their like maybe if you shoot them in the eye. They'll come back with like a plate over their eye and they're like now immune to ranged attacks. And they're like, I remember this fight. I'm going to get you this time.
That's actually one of my favorite ideas is like the idea that they like get buffed in the way that they were beaten to counteract how they lost. That to me is a super cool little detail.
Like it could have easily been just a cosmetic change that they did to the model, but it's incorporated into their actual ability, and it makes sense because they're rising up in the rank, and that's how they were wounded. So,
And the way it takes place is like there are hundreds of just no name low level orcs just like wandering the map for you to kill whenever you want. And these guys are scattered. They're much like fewer. I think they're only like 25 or something like that. But, like, you'll be in a fight with a bunch of low-level orcs, and it'll do a cutscene where, like, this orc calls out to you. It's like, Ranger, mm-hmm. I'm going to kill you. And all of a sudden, like, this new thing is in the fight, and you have to deal with it. And it creates these really crazy moments. Like, for example, like, the first fight I went out on, I was just, like, practicing on these low-level orcs. And then one of the nemesis orcs came out, and then another and another. By the end of it, I was fighting three of these guys, and I was completely overwhelmed and had to retreat.
Damn.
Because they are tough. Like, mm-hmm. they propose a pretty big challenge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's creating a dynamic relationship with the enemies in the game. Sure, you have, like, a bunch of cannon fodder that you're just mowing down, and you have the ability to control certain orcs. And I think, is that also a part of the nemesis system? You can have somebody who's under your control kind of infiltrate the ranks?
You can dominate.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was like, yeah, you can psychologically manipulate people and, like, weave them into the ranks even though they're your ally.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really interesting.
It just creates, like, even more opportunities to put a little handprint of physical handprint you're putting on the bridge, but within that sort of ranking.
But it's a physical handprint, which also affects how you interact with situations in the world sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I just want to say, Max, it's funny that you say psychologically manipulate, because it is just like you put your glowing hand on them and they're yours, and not like you go up to them and say, like, hey, I don't think your boss loves you that much. Like, if you're with me, like, I'm going to take care of you.
I can offer you a 401k plan.
No, yeah, yeah.
You're bending their will. Like, that's all. You're literally.
But that's still a psychological manipulation.
I guess.
Their psychology has been changed by your influence. Tell me what else that is.
Look, I'm just saying that it sort of leaves out the fact that it involves a glowing magic elf hand.
No. By all means, tell me what else that is.
Magic.
If it's not magic. That's manipulating someone's psyche.
Okay, okay.
All right. We're getting caught up.
Tomato.
So, like, how do you guys think, like, the nemesis system has, like, a broader impact on the game? Like, it's, like, mechanically,
I don't think,
it's cool
I don't think
to talk
the game,
about, but, like...
I don't think the game would work without it, honestly. You have a pretty... a pretty consistent loop of, all right, I have these points on the map that, you know, very Assassin's Creed, like, they're side objectives that I need to complete. That's fine and dandy, but I think without the nemesis system, this just as a whole wouldn't really work at all. There aren't any stakes.
Right. Which is the issue. Which is one of the issues I have with some of the Assassin's Creed games. Which, again, like, this plays similarly, so, like, you can kind of infer how this game would be without having the nemesis system, which is you would have a lot of objectives all over the place you could do, and if things go bad, you can back out, and then it'll be fine. I mean, the nemesis system is just like a constant reminder that a situation can get out of hand very fast, and you can just go, well, this is fucked, kind of. I gotta just quit on this for today.
Like, I sometimes, like, forget important things I have to do at work, or conversations I had with people, or, like, things that Annie asked me to do, but I still, after, like, 6 months of having played it, can tell you about Azdush the Legend, the orc that came back 3 times to fight me, and I still, like, remember that, because it was, like, a really cool experience, like, this guy that just kept coming back from the dead to fight me.
Yeah. Well, it's also, like, a really great, you know, Max, I had said over text that this is one of the first true next-gen games on the PS4 and the Xbox One. I fully stand by that. I think it takes those moments and adds a little bit of theatricality to it. You have these, like, the introductions or the clashes between these orcs that have maybe killed you twice before. There's unique dialogue. There's the camera will pan in to, let's say you're clashing swords with them, it'll zoom in like it's a wrestling promo. I mean, there are all these little touches that I just don't think were possible or really thought. They take that nemesis system and really add a lot of polish to it in terms of its presentation.
There was one problem that I sort of had with it, but to talk about that, I have to talk about a different problem I had with the game. Is it okay if I take a quick sidebar?
Go for it.
Yeah. Something this game doesn't do super well, which is, I think, a problem in a lot of adventure games, is it doesn't handle power creep very well. And what that is like, you start the game and it's very difficult. And I think, like, Dark Souls is probably, like, the best example of what power creep really is. But, like, you start the game, it's very difficult, but then you level up and you get a new power and it becomes a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. And then you get a new power. Like, the challenges are ramping up, but you have all these tools and you become more powerful and have more ways of, like, handling things. And in a good game, not to say that this isn't a good game, but, like, if you handle it well, the challenges will scale appropriately. So, like, it's not that the game is not getting any easier, but like the challenge is still appropriate for what you're capable of doing. At a certain point, like, I was never afraid of dying. Like, I could go into any fight and be like, no matter what happens, I'm gonna survive this, because like, you could execute like 30 people in a row and do like all these crazy things. So that's a problem. But what that means is, like, so like I said, the nemesis system, sort of a lot goes on when you die. So, like, every time you die, all the active events with the captains are resolved. Like, okay, this one had a feast, it's more powerful. This one had, like, an execution to perform, it's more powerful. But at a certain point, when you stop dying, that doesn't happen anymore. So, like, I could pretty much kill every single orc on that field before anyone could be replaced. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of took the spark out of it, I guess.
And you do get, like, unreasonably strong at the end of this game. Which is, like, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Again, like, I get the hope that, like, once you've gotten every ability, you should be strong. But that... The level of... The point where you end up does run counterintuitive to the way that the mechanics function with this game.
Mm-hmm.
You're right about that, yeah. Like, I had that, too. That was kind of my point of, like, alright, maybe I'm done with this game. Is, like, the idea that, like... The thing I was into wasn't happening anymore because, you're not dying, that was what it was linked to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about, like, so many cool things with the system, though. Like, Caleb, you mentioned it has unique dialogue, and, like, it's always, like, name and then a descriptor. That's how all the orcs look. But, like, someone is, like, so-and-so the poet, so their dialogue is all in rhyme. Mm-hmm. Or one is, like, so-and-so, like, the profane, and they swear a lot. Also, it will also pull orcs from your friends' games. So I was playing, and I was like, do you want to fight this one? They killed your friend Max. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And I beat him really easy, so I don't know what your problem was, Max. But it was kinda, get good.
I had one guy that Caleb had killed that then killed me and then became a problem, and he just wouldn't leave.
Really?
I kept killing him, and he was like, no, I'm not dead yet. Like, oh, this guy.
Oh, really?
The killer of the boy. The killer of the boy. He's too good.
Killer of the boy.
That is sort of a way that they do handle that power creep well, I guess. That's probably not the right word. But, like, as you lose to these orcs, they become more powerful. So one of the ways they get more powerful is gain immunity. So at one point, I lost this one guy so many times. And I couldn't avoid him because he kept getting into fights with me. But I, like, lost him so many times that he was immune to everything but straight sword attacks. Like, that was the only thing I could do to hurt him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's also kind of amazing to have that enemy become pretty much indestructible on their end if you keep dying. And, yeah, I think that's a problem of every open world game. There's a certain point where you just become indestructible, but it's at least encouraging that they tried to offset that with, we're just going to really buff the shit out of these orcs that are continuing to kill you if that indeed happens.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about the nemesis system enough. We'll probably come back to it, but there are other things to talk about with this game. One of which, Caleb, I have a better answer for you now when you're asking about how it's sort of like other conventions of adventure games.
Yeah.
And I think it gets bogged down by some things. Maybe this was just my interpretation, but at one point you meet this other character, this female ranger named Lothariel. And it almost sort of seems to, like, want to imply that, like, Talion's kind of into her, like, it's a love interest, which is, it's so weird because, like, a big plot of this game is my wife was killed and I just want to be with her, and also, like, you're undead, so, like, that, like, trying to, like, shoehorn this, like,
right.
oh, this pretty girl, work, like, right. She doesn't talk at all and has not much of a personality, but, like, it's a girl, right? You're into this, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, that was weird.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff happens. And, like, I'm not gonna, like, there are things to like about this game. I'm not gonna toss it an award for its writing.
No. Not again, like, Talion is the most, like, generic protagonist I've played in recent memory.
And that's, yeah, and that's, like, the thing of, like, when it comes down to, like, okay, there's a cool mechanic and really fluid gameplay, but then it's a lot of generic, and that's kind of, I don't know, that was kind of maybe a slight issue for me.
Or for the Nemesis system, I think we would not be talking about this game.
Well, I think a lot of the creativity in the writing department went to the unique dialogue funneled into the orcs. Orc which, team. That's the bread and butter of this game, so I don't see the need to have, like, an overarching story with cinematics and a central drive. It just doesn't strike me as necessary. That almost feels like a side quest in itself, as opposed to, like, the pivotal force to finish it. But, yeah, so that's... Yeah.
One of the things I've always felt with this game, and I've never been sure on this, but with the way that you can, like, control groups of orcs and all that jazz, and the way the Nemesis system works, I always wonder if the part of the thing was, like, the game was maybe at one point intended to be a game where you play as orcs and you're fighting against one another to try to take over. And then they, like, implemented it into this game. This is kind of one of those things where I think about the whole, like, okay, well, this is a Lord of the Rings game, but is that really a good thing? And if they'd not relied on source material and just made a game that's its own thing, would it have been better?
I thought it was worth saying.
I know that this is a conversation of, like, massive theoreticals and, like, way thinking at the end.
But
it's one of those, at the end of the day, like, does Shadows of Mordor being Lord of the Rings really offer anything, or does that really, like, benefit it in a way that it's being benefited in the things that are important in the game? Because I would say maybe not.
I think having the mythology never really supports it in any way. I think having orcs as the enemy is certainly essential, but you don't need it to be tied to Tolkien's mythology anyway.
I was infinitely more interested in the orcs than I was in the rangers.
Like, absolutely.
I frankly didn't care about the story.
Yeah.
You could argue, I think I already know how you guys are going to counterpoint me, but I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. Okay. That, like, there are already so many, like, sword and sorcery, medieval-esque RPGs that, like, just seeing another one with no, like, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, but, like, no attachment to, like, a franchise or anything like that, with no investment into it, could just be like, oh god, another one of these, huh? Like, no, having that sort of Lord of the Ring attachment to it kind of gives you a way in.
Yeah, you're not wrong with that.
Yeah.
The counterpoint to that is, like, it also could have been, like, sci-fi. Like, this could have been, like, it could have been Halo.
But, you know, you look at a lot of, like, B-tier games that came out on the Xbox 360 and the PS3 that were not tied to any sort of popular franchise, and just how, like, shoved underneath the radar. I mean, it was... Of monsters and no, that's a man. That was what I was about to say. Of monsters and men.
Of monsters and men is that what you're gonna say?
No, there's a specific game that has something with orcs in the title. I can't remember the name, but Maybe that's the point. Having sort of this high fantasy orc themed sort of game, not tied to a popular franchise. It's very easy to get lost in the ether of everything else. So, I think it was more of an attempt to put it out there and to get some recognition, even if it's not properly utilizing the property, which is fine. It's a little skeezy and a bit shameless, but it's not like they completely did a disservice to it. It's just sort of a side story that you can kind of... brush away. So
that's fair. That's yeah. pretty fair. I want to. I like.
Hope someone. I was just gonna say. I hope someone made a mod where it turns the Nemesis system into a dating system.
Mm-hmm. I was just gonna say. I really hope that there are more games that use the Nemesis system or something similar, learning from it. Like there's something to be said about that one.
Well, there is a sequel coming out. So
that's not what I'm talking about.
That will also use the Nemesis system.
I'm talking about Spec Ops 2. The
waifu weird system. Total waifu.
I can't wait for the next Call of Duty game to have the Nemesis system. That's all I'm saying. Call of Duty
Nemesis system
with blazing praise X420.
Hey, can we talk about the ending real quick? I can't believe we're.
I don't fucking remember the ending.
I mean, because it sucks. I don't remember the ending. I just remember that it was really bad.
All right, go on. Yeah, all right. Tell me how bad it is.
So, like part of the reason I'm upset is like I have problems with this game. I also did get the platinum trophy for it. I did do everything there is to do with this game.
This game isn't Bloodborne.
Yeah. Well. So I saved the final fight for the very end, and it's a quick time event. The big fight at the end is a friggin' quick time event.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. Oh. Like, there's a little bit of fighting, but then it ends with you, like, press X to kill Sauron's spirit.
Excuse me?
It's so... Like, that is the most unforgivable thing in this game. Like, quick time events were really big in, like, the early 2000s, like, when we were in high school.
And
like,
everyone
all
hates
over the
them.
Place. And everyone hates them because it sort of, like, takes away your ability to like do much. It's like it's just like they had a cutscene, but they want you to participate.
Yeah, unless
so you press a button to keep the cutscene going.
Unless you're Until Dawn, QuickTime events are hot garbage.
It's like when there's an action game, yeah. Like there are some places where it works, but when you're in a game like this, where every fight you've literally fought through, and it has been, I'm going to use my abilities to do this, mm-hmm. and then instead it ends with, hey, press X, and it'll be real mm-hmm. cool.
It's just hot buttered bullshit. Yeah, I don't think that's a very satisfying way of ending this at all. Before that, don't you ascend with like your army to fight?
Okay, yeah, if you want to get into it, you take over an army of orcs that you use to sort of assault the keep or whatever. I think the gate, wherever the Black Hand is at, and you climb you break through with your army, they succeed, and then you go off to fight the Black Hand one-on-one. And I think there might be a short fight, but the final thing is resolved with a quick time event.
But yeah. I like the staging of that a lot better. It's a bummer that the final act in the game was reduced down to a quick time event, which is like completely going against that setup.
No, like the beginning of this game is hands down so much better than the end because like the challenge is pretty, like the challenge is very appropriate. The world is smaller and it's easier to like sort of get around and keep track of things.
Yeah. Well, how's the fun factor?
The fun factor I would put at a probably like a 4.1.
Was that out of
by the end of it might be like a 3.2.
Is that out of excited smiley faces or bags of popcorn?
I think it's bags of popcorn.
The bags of popcorn? Okay. Oh, okay. We're on the popcorn scale.
Throwing a wrench
this
in there.
This is a weird bit. This is a really weird bit.
This is a weird one.
I'm yes-anding, but I'm scared. I don't know where this is going.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about with this hit game?
Not in particular.
No.
I think that's pretty much what I had.
I mean, for the most part, it's just like, hey, guys, this Nemesis system is really cool. Rest of the game, not so much.
Well,
that's kind of my takeaway is, like, again, like, as you were saying, like, the ending not being memorable. I remember the Nemesis system. I don't remember a whole lot else of this game.
It is kind of strange, though, that nothing has iterated on the Nemesis system, like, at all. I can't think of a single open-world game that has taken what this did. I mean, it was a huge deal back when it released in 2014, so I'm really surprised that nothing is attempted to do something quite like it.
I wonder if it's just because, like, right now, because it's only been seen in Shadows of Mordor, that, like, you can't really do it without being like, oh, you're just copying Shadows of Mordor. Like, you're just lifting it from them.
Right.
And that's the kind of interesting thing is, like, I think that there's enormous potential in this system. I think, and it's weird to have a situation where, like, we're talking about something where we're mostly praising the mechanics like this, where it's like no, like, it's like there's a bunch of issues, but they really nailed this one thing, and this one way that it works is really something that people should try out. Like, there's a lot of potential there for a lot of different possibilities for a lot of different kinds of games. Like, it's one of those things, you look at, like, how much, like, how well it works within its first attempt, and it's like, no, that's an engaging way to interact with a game.
Well, it's also, like, commendable to Monolith as a studio, because they are the creators of Fear. I don't know if you guys ever played that shooter. Yeah. They're the creators of Fear.
Is there going to be a Fear Nemesis system?
Pretty radical.
Oh, no, those shooters is what I meant to say. So, yeah, it's kind of amazing that they've been able to pivot from creating first-person shooters to a very successful open-world game. Kudos to them for making that transition.
It would have been pretty cool if Alma was the bodyguard at the top of that chain.
Oh, God.
To fight this ghost girl.
God.
Nemesis.
That was Fear.
Guys, what if they make
a Nemesis system with ghosts and Fear, and it's like, I spooked you once and I'll spook you again.
Actually, Max, maybe not Fear, but that does sound kind of cool.
No, right?
Like,
hello, I scared Caleb very much in his game, and now I'm here to scare you too.
I saw that picture frame and I moved it just a little bit.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, this kind of thing is cool. Like, there's some really cool potential here. Like, I would love to see this used in a game, like, where you go, how is that useful in this game? Like, again,
right.
Like a horror game where there's, like, a random element and, like, oh no, it's a returning ghost.
Like Luigi's Mansion.
Like Ghostbusters game.
Or like a Minecraft game where you can't chop down a certain tree.
Because
that tree becomes your nemesis.
Right.
That tree is your nemesis?
And also the tree kills your family.
Okay. We're starting to hit that point, aren't we?
Oh, God.
I just want to say real quick, this is kind of a weird thing for me to bring up because I did do everything. I did get that platinum trophy. The collectibles are kind of suck in this game. There are, like, a lot of things across the map that you can collect, but, like, there's really no reward for doing it. Like, it just sort of, like, gives you some pieces of lore. I have yet to see a game that sort of, like, handles, like, collectibles like that well. I, again, don't know why I still decided to collect all of them, but just, like, a side note.
Yeah.
Coffee table. If we were writing a book that was all about coffee tables, where in the art history section of the library would it be? That's how we intro this, right?
That's how we intro it. So if you look at the Bible, so if you go to the section where the religious text is, you have your Quran, you have the Bible. I think you'd find the art history.
No, go ahead, Caleb.
No, where'd you find
it? Max is just making a face right now.
No, you go ahead. You do your thing.
You'd find next to it, of course, how the Crit Crew has assessed video games as art, and I think as art, particularly with video games and Shadows of Mordor, as being the pinnacle of human existence. And
are you saying that our book is in the religion and spirituality section?
I'm saying
have
it's
we ascended.
I'm saying we have ascended to our final
okay.
form with this very fine episode.
Uh-huh.
All right, so Max, Caleb did his bit. It's time for you to say where this came from.
Well, I gotta follow that up?
You gotta follow that up, yep.
Alright, well, I'm gonna actually go back on topic. In terms of the art history of video games, our coffee table book, I don't know that there's a ton here, but one of the things I keep thinking that somebody else is going to use the Nemesis system in a phenomenal way. Mm-hmm. And then that game will be in the book, and then it can be referenced. Like, oh yeah, the Nemesis system, which was made by this game.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't... Again, it's one of those things of, like... It's hard to put it all on a mechanics system. And I don't think, I don't know if that's enough to carry something into its own... But... there's still things to acknowledge. And I think that someone else will use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for now, like...
I mean, that's just going to be, like... That's all you can say about this game is it just has its central mechanic. And it does a lot of... I mean, for being a true... innovation in the genre. It's incredible that they were able to add that much polish to it. But hopefully it's used elsewhere because I, at this point, nothing has touched it. So,
I'm praying.
But yeah, hopefully it will be a stepping stone for something. It's also worth, like, this probably wouldn't end up in the book because there have been other games that have done this, but like, we didn't talk about emergent narratives as much because we did talk about that with FTL, but that is a very interesting sort of thing going on, just creating a system that allows stories to develop, but the developers do not know what those stories will be. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
And but again, that's like that's not separate from the Nemesis system. That is because of the Nemesis system.
And I think I think for sure, I can't think of a game that's come out that create that makes that work in such a surprisingly organic way. And I think somebody else has. I think that some other. Game companies have like looked at Shadows of Mordor by now at least and said, hey, that did work. Like this is something to think about. This is something that maybe we should try. Like this system can work, and it's been proven that it can work with Shadows of Mordor, which is it's like one of those like you know what it is? Shadows of Mordor is not the the subject you would expect to prove this system working. Like, that was kind of the thing. I can definitely say going into this game, I did not have any expectations of, like, oh, this game's going to blow me away. But then it has this thing, and this thing works, and it's cool, it's effective.
It's also incredible that, you know, we look at all the individual components of what makes a video game. In this particular instance, they had this idea of random... you know, we're going to have these elements that are sort of randomly generated... we have parameters in the world, how our enemies can be affected, how the player can be affected, and we're somehow going to incorporate that into our writing and our voice acting, and we're just going to kind of iterate on that. We're going to have basically all these different strands of elements come together for this particular enemy, and that sort of creates that story with all these disparate elements. And that's, like, I haven't seen a single game do that. And it's incredible that all those pieces, like you said, work as organically as they do, because it feels like that is your story that you're piecing together based off of your experiences.
There is a very unique sense of having dynamic relationships with characters, which you go, I know this character isn't, it's integral to the plot, and I know this character isn't important, and I'm really interested in the fact that I have this thing with them.
Right. And it's not an arbitrary, in a lot of choice-based narratives, especially in games, you have a binary. These are your limited options that we have arbitrarily put in front of you. Make a button press or make a choice, and that defines your relationship to that character. Whereas this is a much more organic way of dealing with it.
And it has more unpredictable consequences in that you literally don't know if it's like, oh... Like, this fight just got a lot easier because this guy who I've been whooping for several days is here, and he's gonna freak out. Like, that's really, really unique.
I agree.
That's all you can do.
Right? Oh, good.
Oh, the contrary.
Thanks and sorry for listening. If you want to get in touch with us...
thanks and sorry for listening.
Yep.
Okay.
Whatever you say, bud. Get in touch with us, critcrewpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your hate, send us your love, game requests, fan art of us as orcs,
as our own nemesis.
Our own nemesis.
Send us that. We got a Facebook group, facebook.com/critcrew, which will definitely have a banner for this episode, right?
It's literally just going to be a still from the game. That's all.
Fine.
That's all. It's gonna be. And then we got it's just gotta be something.
Then we got a Twitter @CritCrewPodcast, right, Max?
Yeah.
Throwing shade left and right today. I tweet sometimes. thanks for listening. This is the part where they joke that I die now.
God, you. When did you become? When did you become such a Debbie Downer, no fun boy?
What the fuck, man?
I'm just saying. I'm just appropriately letting you know.
God, now I'm gonna come back. You've like actually killed my spirit. And next episode, I'm gonna come back without any fun. That's gonna be my buff.
We just recorded an episode, and David's like, "Sorry, this one's bad. You know, this is how we interact. This, I quit. The game's over. Bye, guys. Quick Crew Podcast."
Like, he just gave up, you know? Yeah. Like, what kind of buff are you giving me right now?
I think,
well, how are
I
you
think it's
how
important.
Are you so defeated?
I think it's important to set expectations. I'm just letting people know we said the ending stuff. So this is the point where you guys can make your great joke about me dying, and then we play the end.
It doesn't feel special anymore, though. Like, that's the thing.
This crit is adjourned. Fine. If you can't have it, no one can.